Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Let's go.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to Binchtown TV. We're so pumped for our fifth and final installment of the Flanagan series in the Flaniverse. We're here to talk episodes 1 and 2 of The Fall of the House of Usher, titled A Midnight Dreary and The Mask of the Red Death. And I know the squad is pumped. It's the same four as it's always been. Paul's not on this episode right now, but I'm Kathleen. We've got Luke and Jimmy here. Paul will be joining us for the next few episodes. We're going to cover them two at a time, just like we've done on all the other series, Hill House, Bly Manor, Midnight Mass, Midnight Club, and we're so pumped. So before we get into just general thoughts, because I know we're all buzzing, we have like electricity coursing through our veins. It's October. We have a new Flanagan show. It's everything. Just want to say a little housekeeping. If you're listening on the Fall of the House of Usher specific feed, if you found us there by searching on Apple or Spotify or whatever, best thing you could do is hit subscribe. But we are Binchtown TV, so if you want to go to our main feed and subscribe to that, we're also covering all kinds of other shows. Like right now, we're doing Survivor, we're doing Gen V, the boys spinoff. We just finished Wheel of Time and One Piece, and we've been doing this for years. So we've been covering, you know, we have tens of 20s of shows or whatever. So hit subscribe, you won't be disappointed. All right, boys, let's get into the episode. I will start by saying again, just the cast alone is enough to make me just like electricity through my veins. I was texting the boys. I watched the episode first. I was absolutely buzzing. So pumped. I think this is so good. I think the parallels to Hill House are very similar. You know, it's like a family. I think every episode is going to be a death of one of the kids. That's not how Hill House was, but it was like everyone got their own episode. So I'm really just fucking excited to be here and talk to you guys. So how do you guys feel?
Kathleen, you nailed it. The first thing I was going to say is the loyal Flanagan to his cast.
Right.
And let's just hope that Willa Fitzgerald becomes one of the Flanagan loyalists, because we love Willa Fitzgerald on this podcast. We watched episodes 1 and 2. Thankfully, you know, thank you to Netflix. We had the screeners. Kathleen and Luke both didn't watch the trailer, so there was a lot of surprises for them, but it's packed. We go through these first two episodes and you're just nailing 1, 2, 3, 4, every Flanagan person you love. The only one we're missing, Luke, is your favorite. Nell isn't here. Yeah, Victoria. But just, I don't even need to list them off, but gosh, having them all here is awesome. I read from a few reviews, non-spoiler reviews, before we jumped on the screeners, that this could be as good or better than The Haunting of Hill House, and it could be one of the best Netflix original shows in general, not just a Flanagan show. We've only seen two episodes. It's going to take a lot for me to say it's better than Hill House, but so far, my goodness, it's wild. It's horror, but it's not horror, just like every Flanagan TV show that you can ask for. He always makes it 15 different genres, and I am having so much fun with it. I can't wait to talk about it. Luke, let us know what you think.
This is the perfect Flanagan show to end because of all the buildup of all these cast members that we're talking about that we love so much. Because if this came out first, I don't know how much excitement I would have because I'm so attached to these Flanagan actors. But yeah, this was a great start. And yet when Jimmy, you texted us saying there were some early reviews saying this could be the best Netflix original ever, the bar is through the roof. And like Kathleen, I didn't mess with any of the promotional material except for some of the stills that were just naturally coming out in social media. And all of it was hot mama, basically, who's give me the last name, Carla Gugino. Gugino, yeah, can never pronounce it. But she was the one I knew like was going to be the face of, I don't want to say like the ghost or the evil of the series, because every still you saw, she has like the black eyes, like the classic ghost kind of guidance through this season. And I couldn't be happier that she's getting so highlighted in this show. And she's going to be one of my favorite pieces of every episode, because I'm sure she's going to be a presence in every episode. But so far, so good. Great start. A little bit predictable in episode two. I'm sure, Jimmy, you probably had it pegged a mile away. I knew the second they said that we're going to connect into those, you know, like some of it's predictable, but some of that's like the beauty of it, because it's predictable because it's so well written to be that way. And I think no misses yet. All the actors are great. I love what's his name in the show. We're going to be all over the
Raul
place with
Coley.
Me. I was going to say Raul, but then I was also going to bring up Frederick.
Oh,
right.
Fred.
Oh, Henry Thomas, baby.
Henry Thomas is so goofy, and Broderick. He was extremely goofy in Midnight Club in his little scene, but he's also goofy in here with his ponytail. Like, he's just great to see on the screen. They're all so good and they make me happy. I'm happy to break down the episodes though. So let's get into it.
Go check out our interview with Henry Thomas.
Yes, we talked to Henry Thomas in between Midnight Mass and Midnight Club, I believe, right? Or was it Bly and Midnight Mass?
I think it was Bly and Midnight
Mass. No, I think
it
was Bly and Midnight Mass. But
yeah.
Luke already brought it up. We may accidentally, throughout this podcast, call Carla Gugino's character Hot Mama. If you guys aren't fans of Bingetown, we've been doing this for 3 years, like Kathleen said. We covered Haunting of Hill House, and affectionately, we called her Hot Mama because she's the mother in Haunting of Hill House. So that's our little nickname for her. So if we accidentally call her that, that's who we're talking about, if you're a new listener.
I will just say it is so funny and sort of fucked up of Flanagan to give us Midnight Club with all these children and then be like, and now they're fucking the adults. kids are fucking adults. I mean, they're all in their 20s, obviously, but it was cracking me up. I'm like, Anya can't be Roderick's wife. I thought it was like, before we saw the granddaughter and knew who it was, I thought Juno was going to be the granddaughter that was like Freddie's kid or whatever, but it's not. Okay, let's get started. So in the first episode, we have this like really sexy, like Roderick and Augie, big bad criminal spilling all the beans to the cop, right? And that is just sexy to me. Like, I love someone who has all of the like criminal charges against him, and he's like, let me spin you a tale. And I'm like, I'm seated, I'm ready to be gagged by this. So in the beginning, in the first episode, the like culmination of the first episode really happens on New Year's night. And so in the beginning, the first thing you see when the episode opens was like ticking down to New Year's Day. And then we cut to the funeral. We have Roderick and we have his granddaughter. And first of all, when they call him Grampus, I'm like, what year is it? I'm like, what the fuck? This is the Edgar Allan Poe, isn't it? It's in normal time, obviously.
A little bit ahead. It's actually November. They do a timestamp of November of 2023. Yeah.
So lots of different cuts to like crow sounds and scary imagery, which like doesn't pay off quite yet. But here's where like the Paps are here. Roderick's and Madeline are obviously this like huge family, big in the news. And then we get all the flashes of the newspaper clippings of everyone dying, all of the kids. So you guys cool with me ripping through the cast really quick? All right.
Let it rip.
So we've got Roderick Usher, who is the CEO, and then Madeline Usher, who's the CEO, and they are siblings. So first I thought they were going to be married, but they are not. They are siblings. Then we've got Arthur Pym, the Pym Reaper, who's the lead attorney and just like obviously a huge scumbag. Love him.
Mark Hamill. My gosh.
Luke Skywalker, baby.
I know, right? It's fucking insane cast. And then, okay, and I'm going to go in order of the death. So we're covering 1 through 2. If you haven't seen episode 2 yet, you're going to get spoiled. So you might want to go watch episode 2. Prospero Usher, a.k.a. Perry, died on November 9th in a freak accident, which we have seen. Everyone hates Perry. He's the guy just trying to open clubs. He was a mesh in Midnight Club. So he's a returning character. Then we've got Camille. And then she has a different name. It's hard because we had the embargo
on
top.
Le Espinay.
Yeah,
it's like L'Espinay, okay. L'Espinay. But yeah, we have the screener, so even the subtitles are off. Yeah,
and I will say, I say this on every Flanagan, I got spoiled for Bly Matter when I IMDb'd something, so I'm never
IMDb
again.
Yeah.
Okay, so she died on 11/11, which is sad because I feel like her episode's going to be next. I want Kate I want Kate Siegel to be in every episode. She's so hot with this white hair. It's so crazy.
She's so good.
So it's an heiress killed in gruesome incident on the paper. Then we've got Napoleon Usher, a.k.a. Leo, my boy, Raul Coley. I love him so much. He died on the 13th. And then it said suicide of the gaming prince. Next, we have Victorine, who is Hannah from Bly Manor. We all fucking loved Hannah. Murder suicide rocks the Usher family, meaning Victorine and Alessandra, her girlfriend or partner, whatever it is. Then we've got Tamerlane Usher, dead in bizarre tragedy. Another one of our girls. She was in Midnight Club and she was Steven's wife in Hill House. So that's the fifth fatality. And then last is Freddie Boy, our boy, Henry Thomas with a ponytail, November 18th. So I think the funeral, this may be like the 20th where we're having this. It's only been a few days after where Augie, the assistant U.S. attorney, is C. Augusta Dupin, a.k.a. Augie. And, you know, he visits, he's drinking the $1 million cognac and we're getting into it. So before we dive into all of that, let's, you know, any comments you have on all of that stuff?
What are we coining the FBI investigator as, or not FBI?
Augie. Whatever.
Augie, we're going to call him.
Yeah, that's what they call him. And they do have that in like parentheses if you listen on or watch on closed captions.
He is going to be a great presence. I can already tell because the punchline at the end of episode 8 is going to be all about his reaction to this story, like in this room, kind of how Flanagan works. And I like that we even got a little bit of his backstory. We'll talk about that too, because he was he was a great like just go-getter, and I'm watching Suits kind of gives me vibes of like the guy, the main character there, just a go-getter, like young, trying to come up in the investigative world and make his mark. So he's at the end of his like veteran career, and it's nice because he's going to obviously book Roderick at the end of this series. So I like this back and forth. It anchors us to reality, and it's just a good way to present all of this in hindsight.
I think that if I just list these people and talk about how much I love them, we could talk for 5 hours.
Yeah. So
I guess as we go on through the episodes, when they have a great scene or something, we can gush and talk about how much we love them. But they just ooze charisma, each one. It's unbelievable, especially Raul. Like him being Napoleon is killing it for me. It is so good. Kathleen, get started because I'll just keep rattling them off.
Let's talk about how everyone's gay. Augie's gay. Leo's gay.
Every single character, right?
So far,
only Frederick, right? Because I think every other character we've seen is either has a partner or is playing that
fluid,
playing both sides. Napoleon with his, with his whole scene where he's just sitting there talking to his boyfriend on the phone. And then all of a sudden the girl comes up from under the screen. Like, my gosh, hilarious.
As he's playing Mortal Kombat.
I was going to say, was that Mortal Kombat? I love that.
I love how you said earlier, Kathleen, fatalities, all these fatalities. I thought of Mortal Kombat right away.
Okay. Augie sits down first. Roderick has to waive his right to attorney. So this whole part is basically just saying like, he's going to give a confession to all 73 charges. It's really setting the scene of how bad of a guy. And this is like really relevant to real life. I think Flanagan does that so well. Like pharmaceutical people and companies are fucking terrible. Like they're millions of people have died. This is all basically based in fact in real life. Like just because it's not Fortunato company, it's this or that or whatever. Like any pharmaceutical shit you watch, it's so terrible. So I love that he's like attacking them for this, really. It's like they're such pieces of shit. So it's good stuff. And he's going to tell Augie how they died. But first, we get a flashback to 1953, where you first find out that Madeline and Roderick are siblings. And then we get Mrs. Dudley as Eliza.
And another alum.
I know.
And another alum. I love it. We see the sister as a young
Cheryl.
Cheryl from Haunting of Hill House. Amazing. Yep.
Basically, the story here is that she was the personal secretary of the CEO of this pharmaceutical company. So the pharmaceutical company they eventually own, William Longfellow, she worked for him specifically. He was a piece of shit, Mr. Dudley, man. Normally, he's like inspiring and like telling these big speeches, and he was like a real piece of shit in this one. So everyone's getting to play all different kinds of characters. Anything you guys want to talk about, like I want to specifically get into the grave digging of it all. Like, that's where I want to focus. But like, anything on Eliza, the kids, anything.
My only thing I want to just put out there is that I was getting hints that Mr. Longfellow was the father of these two in some way, because there was some weird non-dialogue parts between Mr. Longfellow and the mom. So there's something more there. We got to get a little bit more information about the background, because I don't know. I felt like there could have been more there, and I don't know how that would play in or matter at all, but it seems like there's something weird, because they're also talking about the dad constantly, and I don't necessarily know if we have any information on that yet, but that's the only piece I wanted to bring up.
I love that, Luke. I was going to say the same thing. She has a circumstance where she tells her kids, you will not go onto his property. When he sees them, he freaks out. He doesn't it seems like he doesn't want the wife to see them. Later in episode two, when we get the flashback with QB1 talking to his wife, I guess I guess that's his first wife, the mother of the first child, and his sister, and she brings up, like, you know, and your dad, and she's like, oh, you told him, you know, that kind of stuff. It just seems perfect that he would be the father. So Luke, I love that.
Well, and they were obviously
You said first kid, but wasn't there two kids in that scene later? Like, we saw the little. Was that Maddie's kid, or was that?
So it would be Frederick probably, and also
probably
Tamerlane.
Kate Siegel. Oh, okay, Tamerlane.
Oh no, well no, because if you said the heiress died in the clipping, it probably should be Kate Siegel's character. Yeah.
Yeah, Camille.
Because they do say he later says six kids, five mothers, so that makes sense.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And she's an alum too, just FYI. The mother, she's a cup of stars. She's like the crazy from Hill House. Yeah. And she's also she's in a few different ones.
Every time she's in one of these shows, I don't recognize her. It's crazy.
She's always done up differently. This is like the first time she's like purely natural. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's awesome. This is where the horror's starting to come in. Mm-hmm. And it's obviously, you know, crazy that we have the mother who was super religious, don't give me any medicine, don't give me any care, and then it turns out that her two children get corrupted and become huge on pharmaceuticals. And whether it's true or not, QB1, when he has his, I guess I can't really call him that, so young Roderick, when he has his pitch in episode two, when he says, you know, I watched my mother basically deteriorate in so much pain and blah, 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 whether that's a true statement or not, we don't know how much of a bullshitter Roderick is, but that was probably one of his big inspirations and motivations to start this company, besides the fact that he wanted to become a big dog in the world. You know, just having his mom just deteriorate and be in so much pain towards the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, he pitched that beautifully in episode two when he was like, I mean, the one thing you should do when you're pitching something to a man, like someone with a God complex, is to be like, you're going to be the Messiah, and then give like a sob story at the end of it to make it feel like, oh man, this guy's really in it for a good reason. And man, hook, line, and fucking sinker. But anyway, back to this. Something we didn't see was, so the first scene is 1953, and then we jump to 62 when she's sick. So somewhere in there, she gets sick. But I think something even worse happens between the Dudleys, I'll call them, but more like Eliza and William, because it is like brutal when they go there. He is just like even more scathing and fucked up than before. And obviously, we have to talk about like them burying her and being like, is that like what? No one's going to ask questions that you just buried your mom. Where's your mom now? But I do want to talk about just Madeline as a character is so fucking lit. Like, her as young Shirley, her as Willa, and her as the older character, which I forget her actress's name. She was from Grey's
Mary McDonald.
Oh my God. Like, what a fucking cool character. Like, just a savage, like almost sociopathic. Oh, she's good. She's so good. And young Cheryl, it was really nice to see her again, as an older teenager with like this, like, honestly, same kind of vibe as young Cheryl. She was very serious too, but it's good. It's good stuff.
And this is kind of where I just want to point out one of my complaints, I guess, of these two episodes, besides the name, too long, hard to remember sometimes, all the thes and the ofs, you know, whatever it was. The only thing I want to say
Edgar Allan Poe. Yeah,
exactly. because when I was first writing the names down, I was missing a the somewhere out. Either way, what I wanted to bring up was I felt that there wasn't enough scary yet. But this part was actually scary with the mom. Like, he's so good at these, at the cinematography of this piece. Like, you could see it coming a mile away when they follow the mom's footprints back inside, and then Cheryl starts freaking out, and like, you could tell a mile away it was going to be a jump scare kind of moment like that.
Oh, yeah.
But it still felt good, because this was like sort of, I was getting Possession Exorcist vibes kind of a little bit. Doesn't seem like we're going to lean that far into it, because she's, you know, we're already past that part. But overall, I want more horror. And I'm sure we'll build up to it, but so far this was partially the scariest part of the first two episodes. I don't know. Is that what would you guys agree?
So I was actually going to say that it was definitely less horror than I thought so far. Yeah. And I tweeted on our Binstown account that this show is wild, especially after episode two. And then I said it's not just horror, and it really isn't, especially episode two. By the time we were in, and I'm sorry to jump ahead, but we're in the club scene, and it's towards the end of the episode, right before the big ending. And obviously, Carla Gugino, her character Verna, is horror, but I was like, there's nothing horror this entire episode so far. And then, you know, and it's still not really that horror, you know, the ending, it's horror, but it's not like the way you would think. There's the, I loved this purely Flanagan when we have the mom behind Augie.
Yeah.
When they're talking, and he says, I'm not going to turn, and you can see her walk away. And then, of course, in episode two, we have Perry before we get the reveal of how he dies. We have him behind Augie as well. And those kind of things are awesome. And I did think that when this scene happened, that this was going to be way more horror than I thought. And it actually goes reverse. It goes less horror. But it was awesome. I really enjoyed it. And Kathleen, like you're saying, you know, 1953, I guess, you know, yeah, where's your mom? You know, she dies. They don't want to go call the cops or go to the hospital. So they just freaking dig a hole and bury her. I don't know.
The
but
family
I mean, you're
dog.
Telling me you're telling me that it's storming, lightning. We just buried our mom and we're sleeping in bed together. And I would not be sleeping that night. Your mom is dead in the backyard and it's storming and lightning out. I mean, that was pure horror where, you know, the lightning strikes, the thunder rumbles, the young Roderick jumps up, looks outside. Holy shit. There's the grave is torn up.
Okay, so let's talk about this. Obviously, she was dead. Like, it's not like they thought, oh, fuck, we buried our mom. She wasn't dead yet and she had to climb her way out. No way. She was dead. But the interesting thing is, like, the parallels between in next episode when we get the young Augie, played by Malcolm Goodwin, who's my boy from iZombie, just like Raul Coley, they're best friends. So I love that they, like, have this connection. Okay. And so Malcolm, like, kind of got his start, like, with these bodies being exhumed. Obviously, that has something to do with the pharmaceuticals. Like, they were taking a certain drug, I'm sure. Like, part of me was like, are people taking this drug, like, coming alive and fucking, like, just digging out of graves and being crazy? Or is it just, like, the pharmaceutical company exhuming their bodies to, like, test
saving
on
their
or
ass.
Something? Yeah.
Saving their ass from, because they died from the pharmaceuticals and it's in their bodies,
right.
Or they're using dead bodies. But I would say just saving their ass. That was my guess.
It's just an interesting parallel. While I mean, it was pretty obvious that Eliza did not want to take any drugs. She was like, God will do this for me. God's my boy. I will be cured by him. He did not cure her. But I mean, I don't think she took any medicine. So it's almost like, why did she come back alive? It was giving. She sleeps, she wakes, she walks from Bly Manor, like the footprints everywhere, the mud footprints and fucking slabs. But I'm just really, really intrigued by that first one, because Roderick himself says, like, this all started when pretty much on New Year's night. It's the first night they meet Hot Mama, but Eliza's been dead. So, like, what is the origin of Eliza coming back alive to, like, just kill William Longfellow? Like, what do you guys think? What's your theory?
That's 100% what I wanted to bring up now, because this is going to be probably a little bit of a tangent for us three, but this needed to be talked about, of just what kicks off the quote unquote haunting of this family. Because I agree, like, that was the first sign of paranormal. And why would it specifically haunt the Usher family if the mom wasn't involved with, because my initial thought is that Hot Mama is, like, almost cosmic karma, and she's out here to kill all of the, that's why she was kind of in on murdering all of these high rollers in episode two that were with Perry. Cause I think she's like this embodiment of like karma, and she's killing all these corrupt people. And like Jimmy even hinted at earlier, they each probably have their own specific type of vice that is only relevant to the top 1% or the people that are, you know, all of this, that's kind of like what I'm leaning towards right now. But why would it be following them when they didn't kick it off? Whatever was kicked off was a result of the mom dying like this and coming back to life. So I have no idea like what breadcrumbs he's putting out there that could lead us to believe why this specific family is cursed, when it would be more likely to feel like it was Mr. Long. What the fuck's his name? Again?
Longfellow. Yeah. William Longfellow.
And that could go back to, if he was the original corruption, if he's their father, then it makes sense, because then it passes through the whole Usher. That's like where I'm at right now.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
That tracks.
Yeah. I was going to say that these first two episodes, I really don't have any issues at all. I really loved it. But there's a possible issue if we don't get an answer to why the mom came back to life for that moment.
We will.
And we have to, because it just seems so important. My guess would be maybe, like you said, Luke, he's the father, so they're cursed through him. He was majorly corrupt. The mother loved him. He is we get the scene where the kids jump over the fence and he grabs at the mom, right? Or does he grab at the kid or the mom?
He grabs the mom.
And, you know, he's saying, what are they doing here? And then even Madeline is like, yo, bro, back off. Like, and then Roderick says, like, even she knew back then there was a problem with him. Like, he was acting with her like it would be somebody, not like his worker, not his employee. And if she loved him, and it might not be reciprocated, it obviously didn't seem reciprocated, but he just became the father, you know, he may have, like, I don't know, tested some drugs on her or something, and she would be like, okay, I'll do it, because she loves him and she just wants to make him happy or something. And maybe the drugs have something to do with it too, but I don't know. I really do like the curse thing.
How does that connect to the supernatural though? That connects to the logical reason of why, like, everything's corrupt and all that, but how does that connect to Hot Mama?
Okay, I think if you want my theory, I think Hot Mom is Mephisto. Like, I think they made a deal with the devil. That's my theory. So I think that the night of New Year's Eve, they, you know, Verna is the bartender, and Madeline and Roderick made a deal with the devil. And whether it's
as open as
hey, I'm the devil and let's make a deal. Obviously, it's not going to be like that, but I mean, it just seems like Mephisto, like, you get everything you want, and then I'm going to slowly karma. Basically, I'm going to slowly take it away from you. And I don't know, though, where the mom and what's his name again? I'm sorry. William Longfellow come in, unless he's just the start of the I'm corrupt and I am the dad. You know, maybe he made the mom sick by the drugs, but again, it's. Yeah, I don't know. That's what I need the answer to. I need to know why she came back to life.
Yeah,
I know for a fact Mike Flanagan's going to fuck us up with that one scene that tells us we're going to be like, no fucking way. I can't wait. Flanagan, we trust. Okay, let's move to the trial. There's a few things in between, but we'll chug along to the trial. So this is the U.S. versus Fortunato Pharma and the Usher crime family, which is like so sick. I love it. All these fucker kids. I love them. They're all such pieces of shit. They're divine. I love watching them make pop on screen. But so this is the last time they were all together, Roderick says. But basically, you hear Augie do his like opening, like he is the U.S. and he does the opening speech, and he's saying like 55,000 people died because of greed and violating regulations and ethics. It's a huge fraud case. And the big mic drop is there's an informant in the inner circle. Now, do you guys think he was lying? I think he made it up. I think there was no informant. He just wanted them all to turn on each other and see what happens. Because I really don't think there's going to be an informant.
That's a really good thought, because because Frederick in modern day, like the most recent timeline, eventually, I forget if it's in episode two or not, implies that he still never found out who the informant was, even after everybody died. So that's actually a really good thought. That didn't even cross my mind, but I do love the idea of there actually being one as a TV watcher. It makes it more fun for us as podcasters, and like
you're trying to figure
it out the whole time, rather than it being like, there was no answer the whole, because we don't like that. We like to predict and theorize rather than it just being outside the box answers. But it does kind of make sense that could be the route based on the dialogue later.
It would be cool to find out that Augie, you know, we see it. Luke, you brought it up. You alluded to it. 1979, he's the go-getter. He's the straight arrow, except for the fact that he's willing to cross the line and, you know, pretend to be a cop to try to, you know, that's what he's getting in trouble for, even though he's not actually doing anything illegal. He's just saying, oh, you know, he saw the coat and kind of just assumed and he let me in. You know, there's the scene where Roderick is speaking with Augie, and it's the early scene, and he says, you haven't even gotten me in a room in all of these years. This is the first time we're having a face-to-face talk. So it would be really cool to find out that Augie just decided, you know what, I can't beat them the straight arrow way, so I'm going to freaking bullshit them, and I'm going to lie about the informant to shake them. And I guess it's not illegal, it's just ethically wrong, right. I guess. Right. You know, so he ethically, morally lies, does something that he's not used to, he hasn't done in all these years, and that's what breaks them apart. I think that would be a cool answer, but like you said, Luke, I would love there to be somebody.
Yeah,
just because I don't know though, like, I so far in two episodes they all just seem like crazy people, but they don't seem like, I can't figure out who the informant would be.
Well, it's not Perry. Yeah. I'll tell you that. It's fucking Perry. Okay, so first of all, I just wanted to shout out Bruce Greenwood, who plays Roderick, because he's fucking killing it. Like, what a great addition. He's a powerhouse as the, like, main guy and narrator kind of the show. He's killing it. But this is when we get flashes of all the different kids, and, like, we get a little bit more information about them, so I could just rip it. Yep. So we get Freddie. He's the suck-up of the family. He's the firstborn. He has a daughter, Lenora, and a wife who gets more obviously focused on in episode two. He's so goofy and funny in this role. I'm obsessed. Next, we've got Tamerlane. So she's played by Samantha Sloyan. Like we said, she has a husband, Bill T. Wilson, and he has like that like workout like company built or whatever. So funny. Doesn't get along with Freddie. That's for damn sure. They all hate each other, kind of, is like how it goes. I don't think any of them are friends. But
Succession vibes.
Correct. And I was thinking, I didn't know what she meant by like, oh, I pushed the girl tonight, we're canceling it. I thought it was like, oh, it was just like a third. I had no idea it was going to be like role playing like we got in the second episode. I was like, man, these people are all like, no kink shaming at all, but these people have their kinks.
She's a cuck, right?
What'd you say? You
know, basically,
she's
like,
what?
She likes to watch.
Oh. Yeah.
Yes. Precisely. So, but that's not what I thought it was going to be. I thought it was just going to be like, oh, like in Succession when like they were going to have a third, and at one point, like Shiv and Tom were going to get a third on the boat at that one, in that one scene. Like, that's just what I assumed it was going to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The one that surprised me the most was Kate Siegel's, because I just didn't think that when she said, I need you guys over at my house before dinner, she just seemed like a full on, like, I'm the boss, you're my employee. It didn't seem like it would be that. And then all of a sudden they walk in and she's talking and they're just in the background undressing.
I know. In their skirts. I love their like kilts they're wearing.
Yeah.
She looks so hot in the white hair. I can't stop saying
she's
it.
So
okay.
Good.
So Victorine is Hannah Gross, played by Tanaya Miller. Her girlfriend or wife or whatever is Alessandra. They're the ones doing this like surgery with the devices. And we can kind of touch on it now if we want to dig into that stuff, since we're already talking about it. Was the first thing they were doing was a monkey too, right? Like, they're not doing human trials, right? I didn't realize it was a monkey until episode two.
Oh yeah. So it was always a monkey.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't notice.
So basically what we find out in these first two episodes, especially through Perry's eyes, is he tells us that each child gets a loan or gets their, I don't know if it's technically a loan or if it's just here's some money, but they get a chance to pitch a business to their dad. And if he likes it, then they can move on and have this business and he'll give them the money for it. And you can tell that each person has their own business. I mean, Raul Coley is playing Mortal Kombat and they say the gamer. So I'm guessing he's in the video game business. But Perry wanted to do the nightclubs. And Vic, she has this medical experimentation thing that she's doing. And, you know, we also find out that Roderick is very involved in this because he thinks, I don't know if he knows for sure, if he just thinks he might have that disease, which is the cardiovascular Alzheimer's. And he's pushing her, pushing to get the human trials, because this heart mesh that she's trying to make is something that may help him at some point.
Bigger takeaway, not bigger, but a big takeaway from this scene that's definitely going to 100% come back into play is the talk about the new nightshade, the new paralyzing powder that's potentially being used. And this just kind of clicked right now. What if the mom was given that and then she paralyzed herself and then so she never actually died? So when she was in the grave, she kind of, the paralyzing powder wore off and she got out. That's the only thing I'm thinking about now, connecting it to that.
That's cool. That paralyzing, I like that.
If that's not the reason that it's being brought up, it's for sure going to be used to kill one of these kids at some point. But just that's just right there for.
I would assume it's going to be her. Like if it's going to kill any of the kids, it would be her because.
Right.
It's all going
to
be.
Yeah. My other guess, just really quick to go back. And all I'm going to say is my original guess was that they were going to bury their mom alive and actually kill her like themselves. You know, like you were saying, Kathleen, that they were thinking they buried her alive and she broke out. Like my guess was just going to be that she was alive and then they just killed her, you know, because they didn't realize that she was dead or they didn't realize she was still alive and they buried her. And I thought we were going to see a scene where she's like trying to get out and she's going to suffocate and die. You know, just another guess that I had while we were watching, but she obviously that's not how it went. She broke out and kills our boy.
Yeah.
Well, not our boy in this show, but our boy in general.
Yeah. Okay, so we already talked about Leo. Julius is his partner, and you know, the girl giving him head was just fucking iconic. I was like, what a king. But some of his line reads in episode two are some of the funniest of like all the Flanagan shows. This is like the best things, but we'll get to when we get there. Camille seems like a PR girly, like Kate Siegel's character seems like just the PR girly. We've already talked about her assistants and them fucking and stuff. and then we've got Juno reveal is the wife. So that shocked me to my core. She cracked me up in these episodes as well. She's just like so goofy and it just does not fit even for 1 second. Like the two of them together, it makes no sense.
I feel like we're going to have to get more of a reason, like former heroin addict and she's dying from a car accident and she's telling the granddaughter like, oh, you're the one who made the medicine. I could just blow. Oh, my bad. She just doesn't seem like she would go with Roderick. And I would love to see either flashbacks or separate scenes with Madeline and Roderick talking about Juno, because I feel like Madeline's probably like, come on, bro, what's going on here?
I think there's going to be something like she. Like the crash has something to do with one of the kids or something like that. Like the crash was caused by this Usher family in some way. Like there's gotta be, there's no way he just marries this girl or something with the medicine because she's been on an unprecedented dose of Ligodone. And then he was like probably impressed and was like, what the fuck? So we need to study her chemistry or something to see how this like works or whatever.
That's what I took it as. The second one was that she's like basically a case study and they need to use her to figure out how to perfect the drug to save him, I think is part of it.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So what, you marry her to like keep her close as like an actual off the books case study?
Or she could be into it. Like she's extremely addicted to this drug and will do anything to stay, to keep getting it or something. I don't know. Something like that.
Yeah.
All right. So any thoughts on this Dr. Donaldson character? Because he's eerie. He comes in and then Roderick seems bummed out. And I think that it's probably Dr. Donaldson being like, your test came back. This cardiovascular dementia or whatever is progressing. And that's what I assume. But it is interesting. Like when he at the end of this episode, when he gets the nosebleed, they're like, only Dr. Donaldson. He's the only one they're allowed to see. What do you think? Why specifically do they only have this doctor? I really love the like sell your soul to the devil type thing. And like Dr. Donaldson is in on it and they maybe have like I don't know, with like Madeline talking immortality 24/7, there's something there that I'm like, who's this fucking doctor and why can they only see this one guy? You know, there's so many secrets.
At like very face value, surface level, if you're someone like Roderick Usher and Madeline Usher and you're so high profile, you don't want any other doctors than your own because it can get out to the press.
True.
What's wrong with you? That's so surface level, but I like that it could have something to do with just the circumstances of maybe Verna or their curse or something. But my take was that he's like the personal doctor that's in, it's like the mob, like, you know, you have the chef and you have to have the certain people that might not be technically connected, but they are the only ones that you have around because you can't afford leaks or whatever it is. So, yeah, when he falls and he's bleeding, he says, you know, it's time. And she's saying, you know, block off the whole floor of the hospital and get us a private, keep it off the books and keep it out of the police radar or whatever, the police calls or whatever. And, you know, only get this doctor. It just seemed like it was like more of a like, keep this thing a secret, even though the press was all over it when he fell. They're taking a million pictures, but I don't know.
That makes total sense. Okay. So, we get a few like scares from Hot Mama. She's also like, I assume it's her with the, like the crow face up top at the funeral. Even though we don't get her face, it's got to be her. But let's talk family dinner. So the cake was so funny. Like they're like, oh, let me guess, cake. Like it's like such a funny gag of being like, what the fuck is going on? Because earlier in the episode, she's like, this always cheers him up. It's like the smallest little things.
Doesn't he say something like, I wish the loan was for your cake business or something? Or if you were,
Okay. So the Pym Reaper hands out this like ironclad NDA, right? It's you forfeit your inheritance if you are the whistleblower or whatever. They're going to basically kill you if you don't do it. And then Roddy offers 50 mil, which is, you know, to solve this and it's going to start the bloodbath. But for some reason, when that happened, I was like, oh, the kids are going to kill each other. But it doesn't seem like that. It seems like they're all going to die in their own separate ways. Right. I mean, it's all like because of Roderick. But I'm not sure. Do you guys have a guess on who it is or no? You don't
the
have
informant?
Any guesses. Yeah.
If I had to guess, I would say that your guess was my top choice for this moment.
Now I'm in with that, too. And I hate it.
Yeah.
It's less fun. I put one on the board like, anyway.
Okay, so my put on the board would be
I'm going to say
Madeline.
Freddie.
I'll say Madeline.
Madeline, that's good.
Because maybe she's mad at Roderick for going a different direction, and if he doesn't go her direction, she tears it down or something. But then she kind of incriminates herself. But, well, I guess not. Like, if you're the informant, you get... Okay, actually, I need to bring this up because I was dying. I was cheesing like crazy when Frederick's talking about the departed and they're saying that the informant versus the mole and the daughter or is it the wife says like not everything's about the departed. And he's like, there's no other better movie than the departed. And that's just speaking to me because it's my favorite movie ever. But I mean, she could literally be Jack Nicholson's character where she's the big dog. I think she's the COO and he's the CEO and the big dog can be the informant. And if for some reason we don't know yet that she's not in line with Roderick, maybe she wants to take it down and then she's the last survivor just because, I mean, all these kids are freaking his. This whole family is his. She has no kids, right? So she could be like pissed at him for just like adding more and more people to this business that could screw them over.
Yeah.
I mean, we have Perry, she was pissed when Perry was doing the nightclub pitch, you know, and then you have Napoleon, Leo or whatever. Some of them are just like, some of them are more professional and some of them are like crazy. And she might just be like, this is ridiculous, bro. I've been dealing with your shit for years. You keep having all these, you know, I feel like Madeline could be a good answer.
I like that answer. I'm going to stick with Freddie, though.
Just guess. Who was the last one to die? Kathleen, do you have that timeline?
Freddie.
Damn. Okay. Because I want to guess. I don't think it's anyone directly in the family. I think it's Vic's partner, Alejandra.
Alessandra.
She wanted the lawyer to look at it, and everyone's like, Oh, it's the wrong thing to say.
That's who I'm guessing. Because also okay. She was killed in the murder suicide. So there could be something there too. That's what it's like claimed to be in the paper. So again, I totally think it's none of them now that's planted in my head. So, but that's my guess.
Okay. One of the final scenes, it's New Year's Eve, 1979. It loops back to the opening of the episode. It's Willa Fitzgerald and Zach Guilford. Hot Mama enters as the bartender. It's the first time we learn her name. It's the first time we hear her actually talk in this episode. And they just had done something bad. We don't know what they did, but something bad. And they're planning off, like they're just having a cocktail. They're going to talk a little, get some witnesses seeing them there. We don't know what they did, but it's sell their soul to the devil sounds pretty good.
Sell the soul to the devil happens that night. That means they didn't do anything yet.
Yeah,
or, I mean,
true.
I'm sorry. They didn't sell their souls yet. They did something before that.
Sure.
Which that timeline doesn't make sense because they did the sketchy thing before, unless it's sell your souls to prevent the sketchy thing from getting out.
So what I'm saying is that Verna is the Mephisto, the devil. Yeah. So they don't sell it till that night with her. The before, my guess would be after the info that we get from episode 2 is maybe they killed the guy he was pitching to. Because Willa Fitzgerald was like, we are going to run through this guy. We are going to take his. I mean, they end up being the big dogs of that. That's the company, right? Fortunato. I mean, that's how Fortunato, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They end up taking over it. So I don't know. I mean, I would say maybe the things that went through my head are maybe they killed him or maybe they somehow had a hand in him dying or. Originally it was something about like maybe they were exhuming the graves, but I don't see that I don't see that anymore. I think it might be that they killed him or something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, Verna's saying trippy stuff like we're sitting outside of time and space and like they're talking about the resolution.
Let's go to Mars, dude.
And like the resolution is to change the world. We don't know, but the like center of the universe is like sitting at this bar right now, so we need to know like that we need to find out more about it, but we don't have much information.
Right. And there is the scene later where Augie is speaking with Roderick, and when Roderick brings it up, he's like, oh, that's like the night, and then he gets cut off. Like it sounded like he was going to tell us. So obviously something happened where it's infamous, where you know, he was I don't know what he is at that time, if he's an attorney yet or if he's a, you know, whatever, if he's probably out of fraud by that point in his life. But whatever it is, he was aware of it. And it's an infamous situation that is unanswered.
OK, so let's end this episode. The six of them are all dead at the top of the church. We get that shot of them. And then the weirdest thing about both episodes, I think, is this scary jester clown in the, that doesn't seem like it fits at all before he passes out. I'm like, that we need to find out more about. I mean, it was masquerade-y at Perry's thing, but other than that, I don't know.
But Kathleen,
tell me,
what does he say when he's talking to Augie? If he has the disease, he sees hallucinations. So it could be anything. I mean, first of all, we do know that when he sees Perry, Augie has no idea what he's seeing because Perry doesn't see, or Augie doesn't see Perry, but Perry gets right in Roderick's face and Augie doesn't flinch. Okay. We don't know if we're dealing with ghosts. We don't know if we're dealing with hallucinations, but the jester thing could just be, I mean, right before he passes out. It could be a mix. Like it could be that's what we don't know, the unreliable narrator situation where some of it are hallucinations and some of it is the ghost. You know, we don't know. Like obviously Verna, Perry could be hallucinating because he was freaking rolling face, but you know, but like, I mean, he was doing all these drugs, but I would say Verna is like quote unquote a ghost. I wouldn't consider her a hallucination, but you know, whatever.
Great point. That is unreliable narrators. Always got to think about that. So great point.
Great jump scare.
We'll find out more.
That got
But there's a reason he's hallucinating that. It's not random. You know what I mean? Even if he is hallucinating, it's because of something. So that'll be like a little.
Okay. So you're saying, it can't just be some random ass thing. Okay. Yeah.
All right. Moving
maybe
on.
Maybe he's just scared of clowns, Kathleen.
I am. Who isn't?
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Okay, The Mask of the Red Death, episode 2. We already talked about a little bit about this, but we open with a young Augie. He's a junior fraud investigator. The five graves were exhumed, five corpses missing in the part of a drug trial, et cetera, et cetera. So there's like obvious, we find out like a ligandone to heroin pipeline. Obviously it's highly addictive, but marketed as non-addictive. That's like what this episode is about in the Roderick and Madeline scenes of this episode. Mm-hmm. But this is the Perry episode. So welcome to the Perry episode. How do we want to start this Perry episode? How do your notes start? Because
we just got the background from Augie and Roderick's conversation in Modern Time, just saying he was the first one to die. This is where I brought up that they never found out who the informant actually was. It just kind of kicked us off right into him saying, if there's one thing about Perry, it's that he was fucking crazy. And then it goes yeah. into like his whole lifestyle, which I didn't actually get all that from the first episode. This mm-hmm. was like needed for his character development. You saw his little like post-morning orgy, like all that stuff. You meet the characters that are going to be linked to him, and the plan starts talking about like the business ideas and what they're going to do with the whole pop-up club. That's like that whole beginning piece.
Yeah,
probably not much to jump into there until we get, I think it's just
meeting
Perry going to the business meeting, and I guess not business meeting, I guess the yeah. lawsuit meeting. Yeah,
yeah. Well, first of all, our homie likes eggs, man, and don't mess yeah, with his fine. eggs. But here's my question: technically four kids are bastards, right?
Yes.
Or no, he got married. Yeah, yeah. How many times was he married? Only once, and then to Juno, right? It's two times, or
I don't know that we know that. Right? I think Frederick hates them all, and like so, he calls him the bastard, but like Perry is like, I'm the bastard's bastard. When Henry Thomas spits the line about like, you're only here because my father fucked a blackjack dealer on a yacht in Cannes 25 years ago. And you could tell like Perry's much younger than the rest of them. Mm-hmm. It's just how it is. Like he was an obvious
25, mistake. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're an usher, you're an usher.
It seems you got like the blood, he's probably the same old as freaking Juno.
Exactly. So you can tell like he has a complex, and it almost seems like maybe Raul does as well.
That was what I was getting at. Like when they have that conversation where he's asking Napoleon for the drugs, and he says, you know, like, listen, man, I know what the deal is. You know, I know it's tougher for the bastards to get up and show that they're worth something. I was just trying to think in my head, like, almost all of them are bastards.
Yeah.
So
it's true.
It basically what he's saying is, if you're not the heiress or the heir to the throne of House Usher, then, you know, there's, yeah, whatever. So they're all bastards. But yeah, I mean, like you said, Luke, I wasn't expecting, I mean, we find out they're all wild. I mean, yeah. That's the thing. All the kids are wild. Every single one of them. Frederick seems like the most normal, which is crazy. And, you know, the scene where Perry is, you know, he's pitching the nightclub, but then he goes to the meeting and he's supposed to be shadowing Frederick. And you could tell Frederick is the son, like he's the non-bastard, he's like the heir to the throne. He hates the fact that the youngest kid, quote-unquote bastard, is shadow. He's like, you're only here, like Kathleen said, I don't need to re-quote that, but you could tell something was going to go wrong when he's saying we could use one of these factories or one of these warehouses mm-hmm. for our club. And that was a good foreshadowing moment,
dude. It's literally like they're in the meeting and they're like, this place is leaking toxins. This place is all these places. And he's like, let's just build something. Let's do a sex club here. Let's do debauchery. It makes no fucking sense. I'm like, Perry, you were in the meeting. The reason these places need to get condemned and torn down is because it's quite literally leaking toxins and poison.
Yeah.
I just love the Pym Reaper character. This attorney is so good. And the scene where he's yelling at Perry for even speaking during the meeting, and then he starts spitting out what they answer. The attorney, the Pym Reaper, starts, they're both saying it verbatim together. It's like, you know that they've been trained, whether it's media, press, attorneys, anything, you know exactly what you need to say to protect House Usher. And Perry's just like the lone wolf, like young kid just doing whatever the hell he wants. But Mark Hamill is just freaking killing it.
Yeah.
As the Pym Reaper.
Totally. Okay, let's go to the Leo scene quickly because it's fucking iconic. We've got a few incredible line reads. So he goes there basically asking him to move a bunch of drugs, right? Like, obviously, Leo's like, I got guys, but I don't got guys. Like, I don't have guys to move like that much. But just like The Departed with Frederick, he's like, what is this, fucking Narcos? He's like, well, if you haven't seen it, it's brilliant. You should watch it.
You should see it. Yeah.
But is The Departed on Netflix? I'm wondering. I'm like, how do they get the,
I don't
like,
know.
You know what I mean? Because Narcos,
yeah,
is on Netflix.
What makes
so
you
I'm
decide?
Like,
yeah. I don't know.
But when he's like, I'm a fucking stallion, I'm in my prime. You're in your 20s. You're 80% cum. I could smell it on you. I was like,
so good.
Oh my God.
He's
and then of course, like,
funny.
Yeah. And then of course, like at the end, he's like, all right, I'll get you the Viagra. And he's like, I thought you said you don't have it. He's like, of course I have. I got a reputation. I got that. I mean, Kathleen, you love Raul Coley. So when we love him now, but when he was in Bly, that was the first time I saw him because I haven't seen iZombie.
Yeah.
And obviously he's in Midnight Mass and everything. So he became my boy.
Yeah.
So seeing him from Bly and Midnight Mass, this is a totally different character.
Yeah.
And it's showing range for our man here. He is cracking me up.
He's pure comedy in iZombie. Like, he's fantastic.
Well, I feel like he's pure comedy
beats.
In real life, too. I feel like,
yeah,
he only,
oh,
like he's just a comedic man.
Is there any chance that they're going to do the whole Seven Deadly Sins thing? I know only six kids. But is there any way that they link it to that where, like, because my thought is just like, is Leo lost or is Perry lost, one of them, just because of this specific scene? It's making me think Leo maybe, and like how he was getting cheating on his.
Yeah,
his
I like
partner.
That.
But then what would Perry be like?
So, I would say probably Perry would be lost.
Because of the orgy.
They're all
yeah,
greed.
Like, it makes sense. Yeah, exactly.
They're all greed.
Greed could
gluttonous.
Be the house.
But I mean, technically, gluttony could be the same as lust in a way. Like, you could be a glutton for, you know, you don't have to be. It doesn't have to be about food. It could be overindulging in drugs, partying, life, everything that can be. Yeah. So they could be similar. I don't know how you do like Wrath. Like, Wrath could be Kate Siegel's character, man. She seems pretty relentless.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean,
agreed.
we could go there.
Envy would be Tam because she's like envious of the brother and she's like weird with the whole there's something there. And then greed fits for the whole house, or even if it's just
I mean, you could
Roderick.
Do six sins and they're all greed.
Who that's would be sloth? All... That's laziness. Like, is any of them lazy?
Maybe that's Leo. That could be Leo.
Or Perry, but Perry doesn't seem like that's the whole thing. Like, everyone thinks he's lazy, but he's really not. Like, I love the scene where Leo is like, bro, once you figure out like what you have in that brain of yours, you're going to conquer the world. Like, you know, and he's saying, you know, once you get it out of your head that this nightclub thing isn't it, but you'll find something, you're going to be the man.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know if sloth works for Perry or not, unless it's just like their perception that the siblings have of him.
People associate gaming and stuff with laziness. So like that works. For
actually,
Leo.
Actually. Sloth could be Frederick just because they do say that he's like an idiot, even though I thought he did good in the meeting, even though it's like you're just coached up verbatim what to say.
Yeah, he's media trained
by the
Pym
Reaper.
Pride
could
be tough
Sloth.
To pin somebody down for.
We need more. This is a great. I love it. Let's keep this in our brain as we watch 3 and 4, because we need more information on these people. We got so much information on Perry. I can't wait for like everyone to get their own episode and like just dive into their personalities. It's going to be fucking lit.
And this is similar to Hill House, where we were getting more for each sibling per episode. Like, I'll never forget, like, when we were talking about Hill House on the pod, and we were like, gosh, we love Kate Siegel's character after she had her own episode.
Yeah.
So I'll just clean up just two quick scenes before we jump back into like another set of bucket. But all that we see is Vic's monkey dies. And then Roderick, we kind of hinted at that conversation. He's really pushing for these to hit human trials so he could probably save his own life. That's one thing, if you want to say anything. And then Camille. Yeah, she just watches the court trial and comments that like nobody's there. Nobody's going to go back. I don't know how important either of those scenes are.
Yeah. So I thought for sure, like moving on. Did you have something to say about that, James?
All I was going to say is that it was important that it seems like the partner of Vic has a head on her shoulders and isn't really corrupted by the family. And she really does just care about their work. You know,
informant.
Vic was, what'd you say? Oh, informant. Yeah. Vic was, putting in the adrenaline, and then the partner, I forget her name, I apologize, was saying, you know, well, if the monkey didn't die, then the whole thing, the whole trial would have been poisoned anyway. It wouldn't have been good. You can't bring it back to life. The whole point is to test the device. And so, you know, she seems like she has a head on her shoulders, and maybe that could allude to informant, but that also just seems like it's too obvious. And then I think there's something that we're going to have to find out about Camille and Vic, like why Camille hates, like there's a scene where the Igby Rigney's character says, like, I hate my sister, but I mean, Jesus, you know, and she's like, I'm going to forget you said that, you know, there's something there, and we'll find it out when we get one of their episodes, I'm sure.
Is there anything with Camille and Tam's husband? Because that's the second time she kind of is like,
he's watching his workouts and stuff.
Yeah, I don't know
Agreed.
If that's anything. Yeah.
Agreed. I think she maybe that's what is the sin that's like
envy? That would be envy. Right?
Yeah, but yeah. I agree that it's probably
Tam,
the cuck.
Yeah. So, yeah. But either way, well, we can talk about that more later if we want. But let's move on to the next piece here. I know we don't have Jimmy too much longer.
So yeah. Quick scene. We get a drip on the phone. That's when you're like, I thought for sure he was going to like touch the drip and be like, what was that?
Yeah.
You know, I really thought that was going to be like I didn't know if he was going to get poisoned by that one little drop or it really was going to be the sprinklers. But he's like, the sprinklers start the fuck fest. And then they're hooking to the tanks. But this is when we get the quick little line where Perry is saying, remember the golden rule, whoever has the gold makes the rules. And then we flash back to Roderick and Augie. And it's so interesting because they're like, everything started with Hot Mama at the bar that night. But now they're saying everything starts in the office of Rufus Griswold, which is so it's so interesting because I'm like, there feels like there's a bunch of origins, right? In the office with Rufus, whatever they do that night. I mean, it could lead into the Hot Mama stuff, or is it back in the day with their mom, Eliza? You never know. But so he's the original cocksucker played by Michael Trucco, and he's getting ligadone by a young Roddy. And, you know, people in pharma are so fucked up. We already talked about the pitch. He did a great job. And I think it, you know, appeal to the God complex and you're going to get where you need to with some certain men. But this is where we get the first wife, Annabelle of Roderick. Is it the first time we get a name drop? And it's the first time we see her, right? We don't see her in one. We only see her in this.
No,
one, right?
That's the first time we see her. Yep.
Yeah. So I think you're right. I think it is going to be Camille is the baby crying. And then even a young Frederick then is like, shut her up. Like he hates it. He would have rather been an only child. For sure. 100%.
Yeah.
The more interesting in piece of this. Yeah. Was the Maddie talking, like having that meta conversation about algorithms. And I guess, isn't that what he calls her sister? He says Maddie, right?
I don't know. I don't know.
I don't know,
that,
but
I
like
I
Maddie.
That.
I'm going to go with Maddie.
I could have sworn that he called her Maddie in one of the early kid scenes, but maybe I did that for note taking purposes. Either way, Maddie. I've been saying Rod and Maddie like the whole time. Whatever.
Yeah, they do Roddy, say Roddy. They say Roddy.
The meta conversation she has about algorithms and the future of algorithms was so just like
very cool.
It was just like there, like talking about like obviously modern day like Netflix and all that stuff is like algorithm based. So that was a cool conversation. And that really defines her whole character, especially when she gets into the immortality stuff in current day 2023. So this is just like it's just building on the base of her character and her personality and what she cares about.
Can I put something on the board? I wrote a guess that I think Madeline is going to kill Annabelle somehow because we don't know how she dies. And I think that like in this scene, like Roddy's being super cheesy and she's like gag throwing up. I hate this. Mm-hmm. And I think that like she probably thinks Annabelle is softening him. And he's always been kind of the weaker one, obviously, even when they were kids and when they were teenagers and everything. He's softer. So at some point, he does get to be the Roderick we know in current day, which is a savage himself. So I'm going to say that she somehow kills Annabelle. I don't think he knows she killed Annabelle, but I think we're going to get that. in some sort of capacity.
And
something
I have a question. I have a question related to Madeline. This could have just been a weird line, but earlier, I didn't bring it up earlier in episode one when it's Augie talking to Roderick and he says like, oh, do you want me to go get Madeline? She's in the basement. Was that like a thing? Or did either of you guys pick that up?
Basically, I just took that as like,
I think he was messing
Madeline's
with
alive.
That's what I was getting at. I didn't know if it was.
I think he was saying like, because. I think it was because the point was he was saying, you've never had me in the room before.
Yeah.
And I think he was trying to be like, oh, you want to go talk to Madeline? She's downstairs in the basement. Like, I don't know. But that is something we should have brought up.
Yeah.
That's why I didn't bring it up.
Something that goes by in your head in episode one, because you're still trying to get who each character is. Because when I first heard it, I had to rewind because I was like, is he talking about his mom's in the basement? What's her name? Like, because I wasn't fully like, is he saying he has his dead mom in the basement still? Like, I didn't know fully what he was saying. And then I rewound it and I saw Madeline or heard Madeline.
So I took it as one, it's kind of in drop that they live together. And two, I took it as he says, like, she's even more elusive than me. I'm pretty sure you've never even come close to her. You've never been in a room with me, but you've never even like came close to her.
Yeah.
So I think it was just like a show of that, like, you know, the elusiveness of the Usher family. I didn't read too much into it, but it could come back.
And that's fine. That's the reason I didn't want to bring it up at all, because it was probably just meant to be that, but it could come back, you know, as like a red herring.
I think she's fully the big bad, if you want to say big bad, of this family, meaning she's the brains. Roderick's fine. Like he's now, like you said, Kathleen is savage. He's boss man, this and that, but she, you could tell in this episode, in this scene specifically, Luke, that she's the brain, she's the genius. Annabelle calls her a genius. I really do think that it could be that she's the informant, just because like she controls everything, and just like the fact that she's not happy about Annabelle softening Roderick, it could just be that she's sick of her brother at this point and she's not showing it outwardly to us.
She's always lurking. She's always around. She's in every scene where you're just like, are y'all fucking? Is this like a Cersei Jamie thing? What's going on here?
I think Willa Fitzgerald, I really want to see more of those timelines, because I think she was killing it in the scene, in the bar scene, where she, again, he's kind of being like, what should we do? Like, and she's like, all right, we're coming here for a drink. We're here for enough time, you know, and we already talked about it, but she specifically has the whole thing thought out in her head.
Yeah.
And she's calm, cool, and collected. He's kind of freaking out, and you know, and she just jumps into the politics talk when Werner shows back up. She's the best.
She is the
best. I love her. I love Maddie.
Quick scene with the AI version of Lenore. Mm-hmm. Interesting. So weird. Like, obviously Madeline is just, she's making her like write in a journal and for 4 months straight and do all these things, and like, something seems so like shameless to me, to be like, she's just obsessed with immortality. So it's like, is this an immortality thing? Or is this like, you're trying to make money off of putting her in a video game or something and like gather data?
God
or
complex,
what is it?
Man, I think she's just the all powerful, like, I'm going to live forever type. I think that's fully what she wants. I feel like she just wants to live forever. And, you know, we can jump ahead. So I thought it was hilarious how they brought up the AI writing scripts and TV shows.
So,
and then
good.
They're like, that's back in the scene where you're talking about, Luke, when they're younger. Mm-hmm. And Zach Guilford's like, can't be that good, though. And it's just crazy how they're having this conversation right now during the strikes, where this was obviously written before that. And I know it was probably like on the radar that was the problem coming.
Yeah.
But it's just funny how that's dropping now.
Michael Flanagan, what a dude. All right, so now we're pretty much in party land. We don't really need to talk about Bill and Tamerlane unless you wanted to with their like intimate dinner. I guess my one question is, who do you think she is cosplaying? Is it Tamerlane? Like, is she imagining them on like a first date? Okay, so I wasn't sure if she was trying to be someone else, like maybe a fucking one of the other siblings. It's not. None of the other siblings look like that. But
well,
I wasn't sure if there was going to be someone that she was like watching these two people go on a date, or if she was watching herself go on a first date with her husband, or like an.
But isn't it like one of those things where sometimes the point of it is that you're a stranger?
I don't know. She's like, you got the clothes right. You got the, like, your hair, like things like that. So it made it seem like she was trying to be something specific.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
Okay. It's not we'll my see thing, later. So. I'm sure in her episode, we're going to get a fuck ton of it. I'm sure. Okay. So Perry goes to Freddie's house. And do we have a name for the wife? I'm like a real, I didn't write that down for some reason.
I don't know.
I don't know that we do. I really don't. But anyway, I'm sure she has one, but I'm not looking it up. Anyway.
Is it Morel?
Could be.
I think it's Morel. Morel Usher.
Picture.
Morella Usher. Whatever.
The perfect just cock go. In your hands.
Start that over again because I talked your mouth. All over it.
No, picture the perfect cock in your hands and your mouth, their perfect pussy without faces, words, or judgment. Like, absolutely insane. But she's buying into it, you can tell. Like, she's like, how dare you? But he knows. He's got her. Crazy that he has, like, burner iPhones. Insane. The amount of money these people have. Crazy. But he throws the invite out. And now it's party time. And she does go. So she bounces. She tells them, I'll be out. You know, my friend, she's in a bad way. Who knows how late we'll be out? And lies. And then we're at the fucking party. And Hot Mom is there in red at some point. But if we want to talk about just in general the party, let's have a discussion on it before we get to the goriest scene of Flanagan history, for sure.
Well, first of all, this is more R-rated than Flanagan's ever done in general.
Totally.
Not a lot of his shows Sexy. Curse a lot. Not a lot of his shows. I don't think any of his shows ever showed nudity before. I think this is the most R-rated content Definitely. Flanagan's done. Obviously, I'm not like upper elite who goes to these parties, so I have no idea if these things exist, but I thought it was cool how like they created like the little app thing and you click on it and it's, you know, like the skull, it's the skull and you click on it. That stuff was kind of cool, but it's just wild. It's just a freaking rave. And I was like, I don't know what to talk about except for the fact that the meat of it with Verna and also the wife, Frederick's wife, being there.
Okay, question. Did she get out in time?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, because you don't see her walk out the door, do you? Just see Hot Mama say go.
Yeah, but I'm just guessing. Yeah.
Hot Mama gets all the innocence out.
So is that what that was? Leaving. Because is it?
Yeah. It was the workers.
If it's going to be about the innocence, then it doesn't necessarily matter about the. It doesn't necessarily matter about the name. It's more about the blood of the ushers because she's an usher.
You know Correct. I mean? It is the blood. Right. And I think that she.
Or it's not her time yet.
We're going to learn a lot more about this. Like, she's going to have to live with having been there and like lie to everybody that she wasn't there. But all that footage most likely still exists. So.
Yeah.
True. True. That's a
going
huge
back
part.
To
and
what
that was
you
the
were
purpose
saying.
Of it, right? Party, like to get the blackmail and stuff.
Yeah. He said, we make all this money, but this is the real moneymaker. All this footage. He's like, this is a. I don't remember. Like, this is a senator and this is a celebrity and this is a first round draft pick. And yeah, I mean, that's crazy. Like, I don't care how elite and rich I am. If you tell me I'm coming to this party and it's going to be some wild party like this, there's no way that I would in my mind think there's no cameras.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, I get it. You're like wearing a mask and all this shit, but it's just I don't know if I'm like super paranoid, but these people are all crazy just to think they could do whatever they want. And there's no cameras. Mm-hmm.
But Perry is looking to make this into a business and like have multiple of these parties.
Yeah,
and then he's just going to like, he's just going to blackmail these people. Who's coming to the parties? Like, that's crazy. Unless it's like a one party, you get millions of dollars out of blackmail and then you call it a day. But millions of dollars isn't enough for these people if they're using iPhones is fucking burner phones. So he goes through them like candy. He's doing like 10 a day, probably. Yeah, I mean, it was a great scene. Just like looking around like crazy to see what I could see. It didn't seem like Frederick's wife actually did anything bad. She was just like shy, kind of in the corner. I think she was gonna fuck Perry.
She wanted Perry, man.
Yeah.
She actually looked like she was disappointed when he walks away from her at one point.
For Hot Mama, definitely.
Yeah, Verna.
Verna, yeah, sorry. I guess I'll start calling her Verna. But
and that's the
mama.
Conversation that's left, right?
She is, like,
that, is there one-on-one conversation that gets pretty philosophical? And this is the conversation, thinking about it more. I am on team, like, she's the devil now because she says, it's always the bad boys that come to me, which makes sense with just the dealing with the sketchy people that are in the gray lines, like all of that works. And she says, like, we would have had a lot of fun, like all of this. And I think he's just getting facing the punishment of the Usher curse, which is why she says it like that. Like, we would have had a lot of fun. Like, this could have been a deal I made with you at some point if it was the right timing. So I didn't really take anything else out of that conversation besides Flanagan just flexing his dialogue writing and letting Hot Mama act. So it was a good scene. But yeah. I don't know, anything else there?
No, I just love that, like, you're a consequence, Perry, and tonight you're consequential. And then she bounces and, you know, I mean, glorious gore. Seriously.
Yes.
Oh, so, yeah. So good. Like, it's October. We're getting this gore. I'm obsessed. Like, as I was really impressed with that. I thought it was, like, really well done. It looked fucking awesome. And they're all just, like, steaming and still kind of alive.
The fact that they're still alive.
Yeah.
And she puts the mask
beautiful.
On his face.
And I think that's
hauntingly beautiful.
Yeah.
I thought that the conversation with Verna was awesome. She's a badass character. I love this, the cinematography where she's in this bright red and you're seeing everything's kind of dark in the rave besides her, and he's watching her with the bright red, whatever it is, hooded gown thing and cloak, I guess. And then she has the mask, the skull mask that was, like, very, very noticeable. Mm-hmm. And then she puts it on his face. Love it. And then she tells the wife, go, it was money. Now, here's my question to you. You were bringing up the fact that you thought the water on the phone was going to burn him, but technically that was just the sprinklers dripping sweat, dripping wet with sweat, you know, so
it's on and pop.
It wasn't actually the poison water. And then they line into the tanks up on the roof, and then that's where they're getting burned. So here's my question. If it wasn't an Usher and Verna wasn't there, would that water have burned them like that and killed them? Or do you think it was Verna's circumstance that made it that?
No,
like,
I thought the tanks are full of poison. I thought that was the point. I thought this, maybe not. I mean, why would they be filled with poison? That's insane. But to me, it was like, this place is absolutely secreting, or whatever that word is, poison. What
yeah,
do you think?
No,
I
feel
it?
You. Like, I'm asking the question because I'm not fully sure here. Like, I think that it would be totally ironic and symbolism if it was really poisoned and he decided himself consciously to go and have this party, and then they turn the sprinklers on and it was all his decision to make sure the sprinklers worked and were hooked up to the tanks, and everything was his decision, and Verna actually had no part in it.
I think it's an irrelevant question.
Yeah.
Either way,
like,
yeah.
We can't play the what would have happened, because this is what happened. I think it's, like, meant to be like this. Like, everything was put into place through that deal, if that's what happened, and, like, all the consequences are a result of that. Like, I don't know if it's even worth, like,
yeah,
I don't even know how to
diving
answer that
into
question
anymore. Yeah.
Okay,
right.
So I think I can end that by just saying Augie, when talking to Roderick, is like, I dove deep into every single one of your kids' death. They were all, like, accidental. Like, I know you didn't do them. And Roddy's like, well, let me tell you how I did.
Right.
So he's going to have something to do with all of them. But is it like, well, that was my facility and I knew there was poison in there, and then he went in there and the poison came down. You know what I mean? Like,
no, he signed the devil. He signed with the devil.
Well,
that's why
true,
that's his partner.
But Augie does say everything checks out as accidental. So
yeah.
Cops went and were like, it wasn't like, you know, it would be murder if they thought that someone put actual poison in the tanks, and then, like, it wouldn't be accidental if someone put poison in the tank. So at least,
well, that's what that's what Luke's getting at, because Verna, like, the start of this whole thing, everything from the signing with the devil to the moment where Perry dies, the whole timeline exists because they signed with the devil. And I'm not saying, like, she snapped her finger and it was full of poison, but I guess that's why it's an irrelevant question, because it's like the chicken or the egg. Either way, it's
exactly
poisoned. My last question is, what do you guys think about the fact that it seems like Madeline and Roddy both signed with the devil, but really it's only Roddy that's getting killed, like, or is getting beat up over this? I mean, it's his kids that are all getting killed off. Madeline, you know, we don't know fully, like, does she really love Roderick as a sibling? She did when she was younger.
True.
Is she, does she have any feelings at all for the kids that are dying? Does she even really care?
I would say,
you know
no.
what I mean? So, like, to her, them dying is probably good because it takes more people away yep. from this business that could screw it up. So did Roderick, and this is assuming I'm right, which we don't even know if I'm right, but like, would Roderick have been the only one who signed with the devil, or did they both? And we don't really know what happened to Madeline yet.
I really I like that idea, because what if, like you were saying earlier, she's the mastermind. What if she was the one that coaxed Roderick into doing the deal on her behalf, so she faces none of the consequences and it ends with everybody dying but her?
Yeah, that Roderick really is the cool seven.
Flip. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then honestly, it could just be too, like, everyone dies but her, and she thinks she wins, and the one thing she wants is immortality. And then Verna shows up at the end and is like, "You think you got past me, biatch?"
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
she dies. Like, that would be cool.
That would be cool. Would be
I wrote that shit myself. Me and Mikey Flanny.
All right. Final thoughts. I mean, we got through the episodes. That was fucking incredible. I love talking about these shows with you. It's like the highlight of the pod for me. Anything you want to bring up?
I think I brought up everything I wanted to. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that is the episode. We'll be back with episodes 3 and 4. We're going to, I don't know how we're going to drop these. These should be able to be dropped right away because of having screeners. So, you should be able to listen to them all, like, as you guys binge. And we also have a Discord, which the link is in the bio. So we'll create a Follow the House of Usher Discord chat, and we can talk about it if you want. We can talk about it. I'm like, Flanagan, we love it. We have chats for all the shows we cover. So come join our Discord. Click the link in our bio. It's a fun time. We'd love to talk to you and hang out. But hit subscribe on Spotify, Apple, wherever you listen. You can follow us on socials at Binchtown TV. Give us a follow. Talk to us if you want. Send us an email, binchtowntv@gmail.com. Yeah, we're having a blast. So come join us for the rest of the episodes. We are Binchtown TV. And thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.